Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Hey, hey, where you been? Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to your Monday Buckeye Talk. Doug Lambrisa, Nathan Baird. We're here to look at the Ohio State Buckeyes from a national perspective. We're actually going to look then at a Big Ten thing. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the Heisman race because C.J. Stroud is right in the middle of it and probably at the front of it, but it is certainly still up for grabs. And we're going to break down where things are 10 games into the season for everybody. I think it is a pretty interesting Heisman picture. We'll lead off with that. Then we'll talk about the mess that is the Big Ten West, which, of course, is very important because the winner of the Ohio State-Michigan game will play the winner of the Big Ten West in the Big Ten Championship game, so that matters to you. Then we'll do what you're watching, what you're eating, what you're thinking. Nathan, to start off, Heisman odds right now. C.J. Stroud is the favorite at plus 150, so that's like 1.5 to 1. That's a pretty convincing favorite at this point of the year, although it almost makes me want to go back and look, Nathan. I wonder what it was after Michigan State threw 11 games a year ago when we thought coming out of that game C.J. Stroud was the highest favorite, and then we know what happened against Michigan. So he is plus 150. Hendon Hooker, the Tennessee quarterback, is plus 400. That's 4-1. Blake Corum, the Michigan running back, 5-1. Drake May, the North Carolina quarterback, 5-1. Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback, 12-1. Stetson Bennett, the fourth. So you don't think it's his grandpa. Stetson Bennett, the second. He's not in the Heisman race. Stetson Bennett, the fourth. He's 14-1. And then it's really a huge drop. Max Duggan, the TCU quarterback. TCU remains undefeated. He's 50-1. Bo Nix, the Oregon quarterback, who had been playing really well, but Oregon losing to Washington probably takes him out. He's 100-1. Bryce Young, the reigning champ. From Alabama, 100-1. Jaden Daniels at LSU, 100-1, and then we're down to 200-1 after that. So Nathan, it's really a 6-person race by the odds. The quarterbacks for Ohio State, Tennessee, North Carolina, USC, and Georgia, and then the running back from Michigan. Hearing those odds, does it hit your ear right? Does that seem right to you, or is there something that jumps out?
No, I think that all makes sense to me. So early in the season, and watch Hooker narrow that so efficiently over that span of just a few weeks. And then the Blake Corum one is also interesting. That if, and I think that's where it all comes down to, if Michigan wins that game again, he's in the Aiden Hutchinson seat. Maybe not to win it, but maybe to take some of Stroud to port in a head-to-head matchup there. Because you get seen as potentially like the engine of that team or the reason why that team is accomplishing what it does, kind of the way Hutchinson was last year. So, but that to me, those three, there's some separation just because of what the teams can achieve. I suppose then the Caleb Williams thing gets interesting just because that USC is really like the last dying playoff hope of the Pac-12.
Yeah, but you didn't mention the guy that I think is the real problem for CJ. And I think that's Drake May from North Carolina. I think Drake May is in the Lamar Jackson lane. And I think potentially, maybe even more, than Hendon Hooker. Now, I do think you make a good point. I think it's C.J. Stroud or Blake Corum. Let's be blunt. Does C.J. Stroud have to beat Michigan to win the Heisman?
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's not even, you're just like, well, yeah, so. I mean, of course. Like, what is that? Because we'd be back to where we were a year ago, which is you're not on championship weekend. You didn't beat your rival. They might be backdooring on a four seed in the playoff potentially, but you think he'd kind of be out.
Well, I mean, frankly, the statistical case isn't so much better for him than it is for Hooker and May. Like, he hasn't really separated statistically in a lot of ways. At a point this year, I thought he was. I got the stats.
The statistical case is not great in certain things. The cumulative statistical case is not there. The efficiency case, right, is there. But the way they have played, and you throw in a game and 40-mile-per-hour winds, which, again, should you take it into account? Well, he couldn't throw because the ball was going all over the place against Northwestern. In some way, I think voters should take that into account if they're looking only at cumulative season-long statistics. But Nathan, come on. They're Heisman voters. They're like just walking around Walmart getting free samples. They're Heisman voters. They're not going to be like, oh, you know what happened? Remember that week nine, the ninth game? Was windy? I think they're going to cumulative him. That's the thing. If he gets down to cumulative quarter, and I have all the stats. We're going to go through them. If he gets down to that, he doesn't win.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, there was a point this year where I wrote a piece about it, that he was on pace to do a pretty rare thing, which was lead the nation in efficiency rating, yards per attempt. So not just not full passing yards, but yards per attempt and completion percentage. Or no, wait, it was rating yards per attempt and total touchdowns. I think it was total touchdowns. I think it was the third one. But it there had been a smattering of quarterbacks who had done that, like, ever. And if he had been able to do that, if he'd been able to make that statistical case, I think it would have been a big help for him. Someone who probably isn't necessarily going to have a Heisman moment the way the Hooker's already had, that sort of thing. But when it's just like, when you're just one of many people who have essentially the same stats, I don't know if he has that X factor that pushes him across the line.
But even that case that you were making, you're making a quarterback rating yards per attempt case. And people are looking at passing yards.
In total touchdowns, yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, that's, even that is a little bit of an inside. Again, you have to, it's remedial football analysis for Heisman voters. So it's just the way they're playing, which we've covered a million times, that they don't want to be in as much of a chuck it all over the field kind of offense. And Jackson Smith and Jigba hasn't played, and they played in a windy game. And we know all of this, but it really is. His case is captain of the ship, but the ship's got to kind of get to where it needs to go. The ship can't hit a Wolverine iceberg if your case is captain of the ship. And I do think it's pretty close to a Troy. It's much closer. We thought maybe he'd make a Joe Burrow case this year. And actually, it's much closer to a Troy Smith case. Now, he still is tied for the lead nationally in passing touchdowns, which is pretty good. He has 34 against four interceptions. And Drake May from North Carolina has 34 against three interceptions. So that's still very, very good.
And in 67 fewer attempts.
No, I go. And I admire you, but, like, again, all of that does matter, but raw. But we have to say, like, we're not making the smart person case. We're making the Heisman case.
Right.
So, like, this is the thing. It's like all the things that you're saying, they do matter. And I have some even weirder stuff to get into. But the raw numbers, let's talk raw numbers. So, actually, let's talk weird numbers first. So, let's talk something else first. You got to be on the stage. This is probably what championship weekend is going to be. Clemson versus North Carolina for the ACC is clinched. That's locked up. That's going to be the ACC championship game. The SEC championship game is going to be Georgia versus LSU. The Big Ten championship game is going to be the Michigan-Ohio State winner versus Iowa, Purdue, or Minnesota. Probably. And an outside case for Illinois, but probably not. We'll get into that later. The Big 12 is almost certainly TCU is actually locked up a spot. It's going to be Big 12 with Max Duggan, probably against Kansas State,
not for sure, but Kansas State's in the driver's seat for that other spot. And then the Pac-12 is going to be the winner of the Utah-Oregon game this week, almost certainly, and then probably USC. So the people that that then creates a Heisman case for, Clemson versus North Carolina. Clemson doesn't have a candidate. North Carolina has Drake May. And if you don't know who Drake May is, you better learn quick because he might win the Heisman. The Georgia-LSU game, Stetson Bennett, again, he was 14-1. I guess he's the Georgia candidate. And then Jaden Daniels is the LSU quarterback. It's like 100-1. But the LSU quarterback is not going to win the Heisman. So that the SEC championship game has like an iffy candidate, which is crazy, Nathan, considering what the SEC is. But again, we're talking about who's going to be on the stage on conference championship weekend. It'll either be C.J. Stroud or Blake Corum in that game. And then I guess if Illinois backdoored it at this point, maybe Chase Brown, the Illinois running back, could get to New York somehow. But it's not going to be Illinois. TCU, Max Duggan is probably a candidate. They're undefeated. He's the quarterback. He runs it and throws it. And then Oregon, if Oregon beats Utah, Bo Nix, the guy we mentioned, he would be in there. And then Caleb Williams from USC would be in there, which leaves Hendon Hooker not there. Like, he's not playing on championship game weekend. And I say it every time I talk about the Heisman, Nathan. I think it is so important. This is where it gets super interesting, is if potentially C.J. Stroud and Hendon Hooker are the two favorites and neither of them are playing championship game weekend, then it is wide open. That's for Blake Corum, who would be there instead of C.J. Stroud. That's for anybody else to go nuts in their conference championship game, from Caleb Williams to Stetson Bennett to Max Duggan to Drake May, right? Because Hooker and Stroud would not be there. Now, it's one of these things, it's like, let's keep diving in very specifically about how C.J. Stroud could or couldn't win the Heisman if they lose to Michigan. That is not an enthralling conversation for any Ohio State fan at this point. Because the one thing is, it's interesting, like, it's not, I don't know if, it's not going to be much of a consolation prize. Like, well, I don't know if Ohio State fans would view it like, oh, well, yeah, they lost to Michigan. They didn't make the playoff. But at least, like, C.J. Stroud backdoored the Heisman. That was cool. Here's one thing from the 937. It's a rant I've been saving. It's Howard and Charlotte. I don't think it's a rant. Maybe it's a suggestion for a poll or something. I know you love those, Doug. I'm curious how many other fans are actively rooting for C.J.'s Heisman chances. I didn't actually do the poll. Sorry, Howard. When I watch other teams play, I'm not only watching with hopes that the outcome will help Ohio State, but I'm also rooting hard for the same with CJ and his Heisman chances. Like when you watch Hendon Hooker or Bryce Young, or a few weeks ago with Caleb Williams when USC lost to Utah. When we win a game like we did against Northwestern, I'm not all that upset that it looked the way it did under the conditions. It just makes sense to me, but I'm as upset that CJ's stat line didn't look good. Am I alone in that? So that idea, Nathan, it is very interesting. Again, the standard is so high. There are places where I think a team, like if Hendon Hooker wins the Heisman, but Tennessee doesn't win the national championship or doesn't make the playoff, I think Tennessee fans will be like, what? 11-win regular season and Hendon Hooker won the Heisman and we finished fifth in the polls? That's awesome. My bet would be Ohio State fans would be like, yeah, it's cool. We love CJ. Congratulations. But man, it feels a little hollow.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it would be a very weird vibe because, listen, there are some legacy conversations that will need to happen over the next week about this Michigan game as it relates to both Ryan Day and C.J. Stroud. If they were to lose this game, very real possibility, Michigan's a very good football team, then Ryan Day will have a losing record against Michigan and C.J. Stroud will have never beaten them. And I think that would be a very weird thing for Ohio State fans to watch their quarterback, who was 0-2 against Michigan, go accept the Heisman Trophy. And I don't even know what that week in New York would be like, having been there last year under those circumstances, and how that would even get spun. I mean, obviously, you know, he's had a great career and would you know, potentially be as deserving as any of those people we've mentioned. It's not like it would be a travesty for him to win the award. But I think you know what I'm saying, that it would just be a very strange vibe. And it's why one of the reasons why I think it just wouldn't fit right. And it's one of the reasons why I think they have to win that game in order for him to have any chance.
So, Heisman winners for Ohio State. Les Horvath, 1944, beat Michigan. Vic Janowitz, 1950, lost to Michigan. Hop Cassidy, 1955, beat Michigan. Archie Griffin, 1974 and 1975, beat Michigan. Eddie George lost to Michigan, lost to Tim Biakabatuka going crazy. Had his second lowest rushing total of the season, I think 104 yards in that game. Troy Smith, of course, sealed it by beating Michigan. So that's two times that the Ohio State Heisman winner did not beat Michigan. I just don't think it would happen, because I think if the door is cracked, either Corum would go through it by playing on championship weekend, or Hooker would go through it because now he and CJ are equal and that neither of them are playing for a conference championship. So let's dispense. And you know what? It's an Ohio State podcast. We're realistic about things, but we don't want to rub people's faces in it. Could Blake Corum win the Heisman if Michigan beats Ohio State? I think it's possible. I don't think we need a 10-minute discussion about it, because that's not what people here want to hear. Let's operate under the assumption that Ohio State has beaten. Because, like, can you imagine if we asked a question this week? Ryan, how much do you think it would hurt CJ's Heisman chances if you guys lose to Michigan? Like, it's so beside the point. If we asked CJ that question, he would walk out of the room. It's like, what are you talking about? It's so not the thing. So, like, that whole discussion, it's like, but from a realistic standpoint, he probably really has to do it, because I think it would look a lot like last year looked. So CJ beats Michigan. Now he's on the stage. And I do think he would be on the stage potentially with like six other guys. He would be on the stage. Drake May would be on that championship game stage for North Carolina. Stetson Bennett at Georgia. Maybe Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, Max Duggan. Okay. So I will tell you, the thing that I did is I broke down nine quarterbacks. Maybe I even went to 10. Did I go to 10? 1, 2, 3. Oh, I had like two different sheets. I don't know if I included Michael Penix or not. I think maybe I did include Michael Penix. Did I? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I did 9, and I did include Michael Penix from Washington, who's chucking the ball all over the place. These are the nine quarterbacks that I did. C.J. Stroud, Drake May from North Carolina, Stetson Bennett from Georgia, Bryce Young from Alabama, Bo Nix from Oregon, Michael Penix from Washington, Caleb Williams from USC, Max Duggan from TCU, and Hendon Hooker from Tennessee. Okay? One of the things I did, Nathan, and I did some PFF stuff. I know we always take it with a grain of salt. They have a stat called big time throws, which is like down the field, tough, in a window. I mean, big time throw is actually a pretty good name for it. It's like you know what that means in your head, okay? They also have a stat called turnover worthy throws, which is not just was it picked, it's like could it have been picked? Should it have been picked? So I looked for those nine quarterbacks. I looked at how many big time throws they have and how many turnover worthy throws they have. And then I made a ratio. It's your big time throws compared to your turnover worthy throws. And again, if there are Heisman voters listening to this, they've turned it off because this is too complex for them. And this is too in-depth and too much actual football for them. Of the nine quarterbacks, Nathan, that I did, CJ Stroud is last in his big time throw to turnover worthy throw ratio. Because as you have kind of pointed out at times, he's gotten away with a couple this year where he's kind of made a throw and it's like, that could have been picked. And is that four picks this year? They have him with 14 turnover worthy throws, which is the most of any of these nine quarterbacks. They have him with 21 big time throws, which is second best among the quarterbacks. But Drake May from North Carolina has 32. Now he does throw it more, but he has 32 to 21 is kind of a gap. Drake May, 32 to 8, he leads it. So his ratio is 4 to 1, right? CJ Stroud's ratio is 1.5 to 1. And that'll have to go through everybody. Michael Penix is second in that ratio. Hendon Hooker is third in that ratio. Caleb Williams is fourth. Bryce Young is fifth. But the whole point is, Nathan, that surprised me. And that's more in depth than I think most people would go. But I think it tells us a little bit about spectacular versus mistakes. And there is some, there, it's not as specific an equation as this, but there's a kind of general vibe that I think big time throws to turnover worthy throws represents. And maybe that vibe might come through the TV a little bit. What do you think of that?
I think it maybe does a little bit. I don't even know if it's necessarily that, though. If it's just a lot of things that we've talked about from the beginning with CJ as it relates to this specific endeavor, the Heisman concept, that there just isn't. There's a certain like flashiness. There's a certain the viral quality of any given play. That's not really what his game is. And
but I'm going to interrupt you here because we know that. But the thing that surprises me is how many turnover worthy throws he has. Like this conversation that the lack of spectacular. But I thought it's like, okay, well, Drake May has 32 and CJ has 21 big time throws, but CJ only has 3. Turnover-worthy throws. Then he has 14. That's the part of that equation that surprised me. We know we've covered the brain as the best body part thing a ton. That surprised me. And I wonder if it matters because, again, you at times, I think, have correctly pointed out, not as a criticism, but even in the midst of a, wow, CJ played really well. Well, he kind of had that one that actually got away from him and could have been picked, or there was a miscommunication, or, oh, I got a little bit lucky on that, or, oh, he kind of forced that or whatever, that has popped up more than I would have expected.
Do we know, such a semantic question, when they say turnover-worthy throws, does it include, that only includes balls that were actually thrown? It wouldn't include, for instance, when he's gotten sacked and fumbled it, because that's happened a handful of times too. So if someone were watching Ohio State and saw that looseness.
Yeah, so let me look here real quick, because I may be slightly mischaracterizing what I'm calling it, and it is a good point by you. So the throw is called big time throws. It's throws. It's actually not turnover worthy throws. It's turnover worthy plays. And to your point, a turnover worthy play, by the definition of PFF, a pass that has a high percentage chance to be intercepted or a poor job of taking care of the ball and fumbling. So like, for instance, he gets hit on the loose rusher against Iowa, fumbles, picked up,
right,
score. That's probably one of his turnover-worthy plays.
Right. Had another fumble that he lost at the end of the first half of a different game. I'm forgetting.
Oh, yeah. One. Right. That Ryan Day took responsibility for, that they were trying to get juice right there at the end, and the unblocked guy off the edge came
and
got him.
Penn State?
Yeah.
Is that the next week? And again, it's not like it's an epidemic, but there's been enough of them. If you're watching Ohio State a lot, maybe that would show up for you. I just, when it comes to the Heisman, I do wonder sometimes, like, how many of the voters are watching all of these games. Like it's why you talk about,
they're not, they're
exactly. It's why you talk about, it's why you talk about the raw numbers and how important those are. But that we thought that CJ Stroud's season would be a little bit more consequential right now from a raw numbers standpoint, and the Northwestern game hurt, but even if you put another 200 yards on his season,
I got two sets. More touchdown passes, I got the sets.
Like it wouldn't be
no
significantly different,
which is why, to your point of like, people don't watch all the games. It's why conference championship weekend matters so much. It's not just that it's the most important game because you're playing for a conference championship. It's that there are only 5 games and everybody watches all of them. So it's like, it's a magnitude exponential how much more it matters.
And it's going to be interesting. Like, it may matter a great deal to CJ Stroud's Heisman exclamation point he's trying to put. We may want to talk about this more in a second segment and save it for that. Who wins the Big Ten West? Who wins the Big Ten West?
It's the whole second segment. So he
is it Iowa or is it Purdue?
It's very why are you doing it? That's the second segment. You're just teasing people? Okay. Like, no, you can tease. So he's ninth in that ratio thing. He's ninth, which is, again, it's not the ratio that matters, but it maybe has crept in a little bit more. It might be in the back of people's heads. Oh, you know, he seems like he every now and then puts the ball up for grabs or puts the ball on the ground. All right. Passing yards per game, 275 of the nine quarterbacks that I ranked, he's seventh. Bryce Young is eighth and Max Duggan is ninth. So he has 275 per game. Drake May is throwing for 341 per game. And Michael Penix is throwing for 364. Now, Washington beat Oregon, and that was a good win. They only have two Pac-12 losses. They're at the edge of that mix. If a million things go their way, Washington could backdoor into the Pac-12 championship. I don't think Michael Penix is actually a Heisman candidate. But I will tell you, I have a thing in my head, because Tishu and I talk about it on the gambling podcast. To me, Michael Penix is a guy who put balls up for grabs, because I've bet my fake bets on Washington at times this year. Turnover-worthy plays this year, by PFF, Michael Penix has 5. And CJ Stroud has 14. And if you had said to me, Michael Penix and CJ Stroud, one guy has 5 turnover-worthy plays and one guy has 14, I would be like, no doubt about it, Michael Penix has 14. I'm not saying it's the be-all, end-all. That's their stats. They track it. They label it. They define it. And he has 5. And to me, Michael Penix is like, will make a play right at a crucial time to kill you. And he actually did it against Oregon. He threw a goal, like threw a terrible pick, and then they still overcame it and won. So I'm just saying. All right. So now we're getting to the stuff that people understand. Cumulative stats, passing yards per game, the nine quarterbacks that you would even consider, he's seventh. Yards from scrimmage, we're bringing rushing yards into it. Okay? We're bringing rushing yards into it. Drake May throws for 341 yards per game. He runs for 58 yards per game. He is averaging 399 yards from scrimmage per game. He is first in this group. Michael Penix at 369 is second. He doesn't run at all. He's the only quarterback who runs less than CJ in this group of nine, but he throws for 364, so he's second. Caleb Williams is third. I don't know. He's tied for third with Bo Nix. Fifth is, who did I miss here? Fifth is Hendon Hooker. He's 310 per game. Sixth is Stetson Bennett. He's 304 per game. He runs for 14 per game. Seventh is Bryce Young, 287 per game. CJ Stroud is eighth. Max Duggan is ninth at 277. So yards from scrimmage, he's 27 yards per game behind Hendon Hooker. He is 116 yards per game from scrimmage per game behind Drake May. Quarterback rating, like, which is an efficiency rating. Different people have different ratings. I'm looking at the one at cfbstats.com. CJ's first. CJ's, and all these guys I'm talking about are the highest in the country. CJ's first in this group. Hooker is second in this group. May is third in this group. And they're like all in the top five. Nix is fourth. Duggan is fifth. They're all very highly rated from an efficiency standpoint. And as we said, Stroud and Duggan are tied for the national lead in touchdowns. And yards per attempt, May is slightly ahead of him, I think. He did pass him, I think. Let me look. Yards per attempt. I think it was May is... No, CJ is still ahead, actually. Hendon Hooker is first at 10.1 yards per attempt. CJ is second at 9.9. May is fourth at 9.5. So probably Hooker, Stroud, and May are all close enough there that it's not a huge thing. But Nathan, this is why I think the number one threat to CJ Stroud, victorious against Michigan CJ Stroud, is Drake May. Because he is on the Lamar path. He's on the Pickett path. Plus, he's only a second year guy. He is getting buzz as like a future first-round NFL pick. I do think Heisman voters, for good or for bad, let NFL draft stock leak into their thinking. This guy is getting talked up a ton. North Carolina only has one loss. They lost to Notre Dame. He is like throwing for 350 and running for another 50 every game. And they are not going to be a national championship contender, but he is going to play on conference championship weekend against a Clemson defense that at least has a good reputation. And I think it's possible, Nathan, that even if CJ Stroud has a very good winning game in the Big Ten championship game for Ohio State to get to 13-0, I think 13-0 CJ Stroud beats Hendon Hooker. I think in every circumstance, because Hooker's not going to be playing. I think 13-0 CJ Stroud beats Stetson Bennett. I think 13-0 CJ Stroud has vanquished Blake Corum. I think 13-0 CJ Stroud beats Caleb Williams. I think the only guy who can beat 13-0 CJ Stroud is out of his mind Drake May, who throws for 471 yards and 6 touchdowns against Clemson. And from a cumulative stat standpoint, you look down and he's throwing for 100 more yards per game than CJ. So I think CJ is in very good shape if Ohio State does what they want to do and gets where they want to go. But I think May makes it less than 100% assured that 13-0 CJ Stroud wins the Heisman. That's officially where I am on best case scenario for CJ. Now, give me CJ in the Big Ten championship game throwing for 386 and 6 scores, and Drake May can throw for 14 touchdowns and it doesn't matter. CJ looking not just like the captain of the ship, but like, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio on the front of the boat, like the leading man, like beyond just like the ship is good. I guess that was a bad, the ship there, not so good. Like the ship is good. If the ship's good, his chances are really good. If he's a star and the ship is good, he's locked it down. But I think there's a crack for Drake May in that scenario. Okay. That's where I am officially. Where are you officially as CJ as a Heisman candidate?
The Drake May thing, to me, how much do you think it will matter, if at all, the idea of like playoff contention at this point? That yes, they'll be playing on championship weekend, because I don't think there's any path for North Carolina to make it as a one-loss
No, the, team the ACC's out. For.
They're like the quietest 9-1 team in the country. They lost to Notre Dame and they've beaten nobody until they beat Wake Forest. That's like their best win. But Wake Forest is kind of plummeting, and they had won. They've beaten Duke. They've beaten Duke on the road. Like they're not that good. Or even if they are, they haven't shown it. Their schedule doesn't show it. Like they have a very weak schedule, and I don't know if that's something that would, like, even subconsciously get factored into this, that people see that, yes, they're all playing on championship weekend, but CJ Stroud is playing to get his team to another level of championship, whereas Drake May is playing for that championship, that ACC championship, and then whatever bowl game. The Kenny Pickett thing is a very interesting, because you remember last year at this time, I was kind of like, Kenny Pickett, like, why? I don't think – I was dismayed that Pickett finished ahead of Stroud. I did not think there was a case for Pickett to finish ahead of Stroud last year. That was maybe the one place where the voting I thought was wrong on the Heisman. And it would be disheartening to see. Oh, maybe I shouldn't say disheartening, because I've always also been someone who takes a very, I look down on the Heisman also. And it would be just kind of, I guess, maybe in keeping with that tradition that someone like Drake May could put up the numbers he does against a very paper thin schedule and get rewarded for it. Whereas Stroud would almost be penalized, even though their schedule hasn't exactly been that tough, but compared to what North Carolina has played, there's no comparison.
North Carolina's defense by EPA per game is ranked 118th in the country. And their offense is ranked 8th. Ohio State's offense is ranked 3rd. Ohio State's defense is also ranked 3rd. I'm just saying, you could say, well, it's not his fault, his defense stinks, which is, like, I think there's a decent amount of truth to that, right? Now, everything you said about the schedule is true, but also, right, like, Ohio State's schedule, we've been talking about Ohio State's schedule. It's not Ohio State's fault that Michigan State and Wisconsin and Notre Dame aren't as good as people thought. But the one thing is, CJ Stroud beat Notre Dame and Drake May did not. So there's a head-to-head that defense might come into it.
But his defense stinking has helped May.
But you're talking about from a national. You just said the contention that they're not a national playoff contender, right? They're not a contender for the playoff, national, and that matters,
right? Because of their schedule. Well, the reason they're not a contender necessarily.
Well, if they were undefeated, they'd be. If they were the undefeated ACC champ, they'd be in.
They're 9-1 with one loss to Notre Dame. If there were other games on that schedule that they had been able to win, they would be, I think, in a better position. They would be farther up in the rankings to where if they won 2 more games and then beat Clemson in the ACC championship game, there was a path for them to sneak in at 4. I don't think that exists for them right now. That's completely off the table. And I think the defense
they're
is
not
actually
getting in.
Helping.
We said that. They are not getting
right.
in.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying the defense is helping him put up all these numbers you're talking about.
Drake May against Notre Dame threw for 301 yards and 5 touchdowns, and they lost 45-32. So his defense didn't help him there. His team has a bad defense. I know what you're saying. It's a little bit of them with like the Dwayne Haskins case. Like Dwayne put up gigantic numbers and finished third in 18 because Ohio State's defense was so bad. You kept having to throw. You kept having to stay on the field. You kept having to stay in games. I'm just saying that I think people – I'm not saying I would vote for Drake May instead of C.J. Stroud because North Carolina's defense is bad. I'm saying that people could look and say, well, they have one loss in the loss. So, okay, C.J. Stroud and Drake May both played Notre Dame. Ohio State won, Notre Dame lost. North Carolina scored more points than Ohio State did, and Drake May threw for more yards and more touchdowns than C.J. Stroud did. So why did Ohio State beat Notre Dame and North Carolina didn't? Was it the quarterback, or was it that Drake May's team is not as good? So I'm saying that I do think sometimes if part of your team is terrible, but you are awesome at what you do, it can backdoor support for you. Whereas, fair or not, I almost don't think sometimes in the right scenario, people will almost ding you for being part of a good team. And it's like, well, wow, there's lots of good players on that team. I'm Marvin Harrison Jr. You know, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's fair. You know, but I do think, right. again, he's going to lose the stat case to Drake May. That's sealed. He's going to lose the stat case. His team is better. His team has a chance to win a national championship, and Drake Mays does not. So what carries the day if both are good? If both are on the final stage at the same time, what carries the day? My guess is C.J. Stroud carries the day, right? That's that people do like winners. We've seen that. I mean, I think that's always the case. It's like, what's the best case? I think the best case for any Heisman candidate is to be the quarterback of the undefeated number one team. Like, that's the best case. And so Georgia's going to be number one, but their quarterback is like they're just a weird, goofy team that can't produce a Heisman candidate because their defense is so good and they don't have a guy who stands out there. And then I guess is it Stetson Bennett? So the absence of a real candidate from Georgia, then it's C.J. Stroud. He's the quarterback of the undefeated number two team. That's the best case you can make. But this other guy has 400 yards from scrimmage per game. And if he looks like the next Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if people will have a wandering eye if there's any chance left open. If CJ is 17 of 24 for 211 yards and 2 touchdowns in the Big Ten championship game, I just think the door might be cracked. But I think he's probably going to win. I think if they're 13-0, let's put a percent on this and we can end this conversation. We're talking circles at this point. If Ohio State's 13-0, and you don't really know anything else, but they're 13-0, what percent chance do you think C.J. Stroud has to win the Heisman?
Above 50. Yeah. Because I think also when we look at this Michigan game, I don't think I feel like we're reaching back to Saturday night again now. I don't think Ohio State goes in there and just tries to 3 yards in a cloud of dust it against Michigan. I think that that game could come through the vessel of C.J. Stroud. That win could come through C.J. Stroud and the way he picks apart a defense. And that won't be championship weekend, but it's the most watched game of the year, other than postseason stuff.
Yeah.
So that's in its own way. If you get on that stage, I mean, it happened last year. He was going to win the award potentially, or he was right there. And then Aiden Hutchinson on that stage takes it away from him. I think C.J. Stroud can go in and secure his status in that game in the same way.
Because I do think in the scenario we're creating, which is 13-0 Ohio State, how do they beat Michigan if CJ's not good? Like, you almost are assuming, like, what is the world in which Ohio State beats Michigan, but CJ does not look like a very good Heisman-worthy quarterback? Like, it almost, you can't wrap your head. You think they're going to win, like, 12-6? No, you think they're going to win by C.J. Stroud leading them to victory. So I think I would put it between 85 and 90% of 13-0 C.J. Stroud winning the Heisman. But I'm not at 100 because of because of Drake May's raw stats and because of the NFL draft prospect part of it. If they just are on the same weekend and people watch it and think, oh, I think Drake May's better. I'm not saying he is. They're both probably top five picks. I think they'll both succeed as NFL quarterbacks. But if he goes bonkers statistically and people say, I just think Drake May is better, I think 13-0 CJ overcomes that. But anyway, I was a little surprised by some of the statistical stuff. It is just not a raw case. It's a winner case, and it's a bit of a nuance case. Because again, as the thing that you were, before I cut you off, because we have said it before, the things that he does best are not as apparent to the naked eye, I think. And I do think that remains a little bit of something for him to deal with.
But I also think, too, national people are going to get it out there in the way they talk about this team that, he had this year and he barely had Jackson Smith and Jigba, and both of his starting running backs keep getting hurt and they've had to get by without them. And I think there's going to be, the narrative, the context of some of what this season was is going to get out there to at least some of these voters.
All right. When we come back, we will talk about the Big Ten West race. I don't know if it's a race. What would it be? Like a mud fight? Have you ever mud wrestled? The Big Ten West mud wrestle? I know there was a thing like Iowa players throw hay bales over like a crossbar. I watched that this summer.
Did you have like your county fairs and stuff growing up? Did you have demolition derbies?
Yeah.
It's kind of a demolition derby.
Yeah.
It's not really a race. It's sort of a war of attrition.
Yeah. Whose car is still running at the end? Yeah. And Brett Bielema, his car was looking pretty good. Then he just drove straight into the wall. Okay, we'll be back after this on Buckeye Talk.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, back on Buckeye Talk. Nathan, is there anything to talk about with your ballot? Who's still voting Ohio State number one? Is it you? It's not you, is it? They have one first place vote in the AP?
Last week I think it was somebody for like the Quad City Times or something that was voting them number one. They really cast a wide net on who gets to vote in this thing. You don't necessarily have to, cover a team.
Yeah. Look at you just going in. Look at you. Was this like a bean field thing against the Quad Cities? Because the Quad Cities, it's two cities in Iowa and two in Illinois on the opposite sides of the river. Do you look down your nose at the Iowa side of the river?
I really have nothing against the Quad Cities. I used to, a family friend that used to live in Moline. We used to go visit her, and it was a lot of fun. So I'm not going to talk about the Quad Cities, but it's Steve Batterson of the Quad City Times.
You just said
Davenport, Iowa.
You said you have nothing against the Quad Cities, but when I said, who's voting Ohio State number one, you were like, some guy from the Quad Cities. They'll let anybody vote. It's like, well, no, that kind of was against the Quad Cities. It's four cities in one.
I don't know. I guess it makes sense. I mean, he's kind of in between several colleges there, even though none are actually there. I don't know how sometimes certain people end up with their votes. It's interesting.
Yeah. No, I think sometimes they have to scrape them. They scrape it a little bit. I do think some people don't want to. Some places their employers won't let them. So anyway, all right. So Ohio State has one vote in the AP. The AP doesn't matter. They're going to be number two in the college football playoff rankings again. What does matter is who they're going to play in the Big Ten championship game, and it's probably going to be Iowa. How about that? If Iowa wins out, it's Iowa. Like, there's all these things now, but, like, if Iowa beats Minnesota this week and then beats Nebraska, it's Iowa. And if Iowa doesn't win out, then if Purdue wins out, then it's Purdue if Iowa loses. So if Iowa wins its next two games, it's Iowa. If Iowa loses one of those two games, but Purdue wins its two games, it's Purdue. If Minnesota beats Iowa this week, and then Purdue also loses one of its final two games, it's Minnesota. So those really are the three options. This Iowa-Minnesota game this week is huge, because if Iowa wins, all they have to do is beat Lousy Nebraska, and they're in. If Minnesota wins, Minnesota's like, oh my gosh, we're practically there. Now we're rooting for a Purdue loss. It's Iowa, Purdue, or Minnesota. What would be the best outcome for the Big Ten, Nathan? What would be the most exciting game for one of those teams to face either Michigan or Ohio State?
Not Iowa. Because I believe they've already did they lose to Michigan also? Did they play Michigan also?
No.
They did not play Michigan. Well, we know what Ohio State did against them already. So yeah. There's no juice for a rematch where the first game was 54-10. And there's not going to be any rematch. It'd be a rematch of last year's championship game where Michigan beat them 40-6 or whatever.
Yeah.
So not Iowa. Iowa winning the Big Ten West is bad for the Big Ten, and I don't care who hears it. Whatever member of the Ferentz family, it's bad for the Big Ten. Like, they can't play at that level. They've proven that they cannot play at that level, and the Big Ten is going to be seen in lower esteem if Iowa is the team that goes to Indianapolis to get shellacked by either one of these teams that's going to be playing in Ohio Stadium in a couple weeks. I think it's good for the Big Ten if there's some new blood, maybe.
Yeah.
So either Minnesota or Purdue getting in there, I think, would be good for the Big Ten. It would be especially good because the gate is about to be sealed and locked for teams like that to get into the Big Ten championship game very often, if ever. Like, when they go to no divisions, it's going to be the cream of the cream of the cream of the crop. And these years where you have a bunch of three loss teams from the West figuring out who's going to suck less and end up in Indianapolis is going to be a thing of the past. Or not just Indianapolis, Los Angeles, wherever they play that game. It's not going to be – yeah, Vegas. It's not going to be Iowa backdooring its way into those things. So I think Purdue or Minnesota going would be interesting. And then I suppose – I mean, the outlier is if Illinois were to beat Michigan – and win out and somehow make it in, that would, I guess, also count as the new blood. That's just obviously the least likely outcome.
I mean,
if
Illinois beats Michigan, we're going to be talking a lot about Illinois beating Michigan. So, like, Illinois beating right. Michigan is a big deal beyond just, like, who the Big Ten West positioning.
Right.
Iowa is a 2.5-point underdog at Minnesota at the moment. So Minnesota favored to win that game. The Pac-12... As soon as, like, all this new stuff started shaking out, the Pac-12, like, right away before this season started, was like, we're done with divisions. And that's why we are in the situation that we are with. They have this wide open race with a bunch of one-loss teams. There's no divisions. They kept, like, the schedule that had been based on divisions, had been based on a north-south and crossover games. They kept the schedule, and then they were just like, the heck with divisions, the two best teams get in. Nathan, if the Big Ten had done the same... And listen, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten are in lockstep on a lot of things. It would not be ridiculous if, like, the Pac-12 had done it and the Big Ten had been like, you know what, let's do that. If they had done that, an Ohio State-Michigan Big Ten championship game would already be locked down. Because everybody in the West has three losses. The only other team that has fewer losses than that is Penn State. And Penn State's two losses are to Ohio State and Michigan. So even if Ohio State-Michigan, like, if anybody lost their last two games, they'd still have the tiebreaker over Penn State. What would we think of that? Like, right, think about that right now, because again, that's the world that we're going to be getting to in 2024. Now, USC will have something to say about that. And if USC and UCLA were in the Big Ten right now, they would have something to say about who the two best teams are. But that was never going to happen. The thing that actually could have happened was that for the 2022 season, the Big Ten punted divisions, and we'd be sitting here right now knowing that we were playing that game twice in a row. Would that be better than this demolition derby in the West? Or would that make this super duper weird that we were entering the 11th game of the season knowing that we were then preparing for an Ohio State-Michigan doubleheader.
I think it would be weird. I don't know if that necessarily means it wouldn't still be better, though. And I think, wouldn't the same thing have been true last year? Because Ohio State and Michigan had one loss. Michigan State had two losses at that point, right? Because they had also lost to Purdue. So whoever won, it would have forced a rematch, I think, because I think Iowa had at least two losses. So it would have been Michigan and Ohio State. I guess maybe if Ohio State had beaten Michigan, there would have been a two-loss thing because Michigan State had beaten Michigan.
Anyway.
Maybe it was. Anyway, but we definitely know it would be the case this year. And I don't understand how you would vote for, well, it's better if a three-loss sacrificial lamb is limping into Indianapolis as opposed to the second best team in the conference, which happens to be one of the like five best undisputably teams in the country. And I know it's going to be weird for people to have the absoluteness of the game be compromised in the future, but I don't, that's then maybe move the game off the last week of the year. Like that's your only option because
do you want to get 4,000 texts? Yeah. Okay.
I'm not saying, I'm not advocating for that, but I'm saying that that's really your only option. If you're that skeeved out by those games being back to back, and I don't think it's the back to back thing. I think it's playing that game a second time under any circumstances.
Oh no, I think it's back to back.
Well, I think the back to back makes it worse, but I don't think they want to play.
Makes it significantly weirder because like the Big 12 right now, I mean, has been living in a world where it's a 10 team conference and you play all the other nine and it's a guaranteed rematch in the championship game. And it's not the same. I think you can wrap your head around it. I think the double down of it is that this far out, it's not that even, well, depending on the result, there could be a rematch. It's 2 weeks ahead of the first game. You already know a rematch is guaranteed. I just, because to me now that almost is like, is the presence of the second game somehow affecting the first game? That is where I think, not that you play one and then, oh my gosh, it turns out we're playing a second one. That it almost, like, you know what I mean? Like you, but you don't want to change the news by becoming the news. Like you don't want to change the first game by guaranteeing the second game, except you would be doing that this year. And again, I think the main thing is like, well, stuff changes and this is the new reality. But I do think the back-to-back nature of it and knowing it this far ahead, to me, that takes a little bit of time to come to grips with that because it is.
We've already started talking. I mean, a lot of what we're going to write about this week on our site is not Maryland. It's already going to be Michigan stuff. And we would probably be approaching this in a different way if they were guaranteed of a rematch. The stakes of the game would be different. But it's also, we're coming very rapidly on the stakes of the game being pretty different anyway, just with the expansion to 12 teams.
Yeah.
So that all of that is going to change a little bit. And I definitely understand people who mourn that. I think there is probably something lost there. Sometimes you lose things to gain more for the greater good, I suppose.
Yeah. It really is going to be the idea of Ohio State, Michigan being the end all be all, right? That is changed to some degree with the nationalization of the sport and how, you know, the BCS and having an actual national championship game instead of leaving it up to the polls. And, you know, obviously that's a change from the era when Ohio State, Michigan was everything. And then the reward for winning the Ohio State, Michigan game was going to the Rose Bowl. And maybe that would give you a chance to be number one, but like really, it's all about Ohio State, Michigan. Certainly, that has been lessened. But the idea of a second game right on top of the first game, and my gosh, could you meet each other in the playoff? That really is going to change. It's because it can't be the end all be all if it's just game one of two. Now I do, but then again, it's like the idea of okay, well, if you were playing Ohio State, Michigan back to back this year, if a team wins twice, that team's in and the other team's out. So that's pretty exciting that you could like kick the other team. Not only would you make the playoff, you'd kick the other team out of the playoff. And if they split, they both might make it. So I mean, it's not like you would like eliminate the stakes of the game. And I don't think you would eliminate the intensity, you know, and I don't think that anybody would like take the first game off because they want, you know, they're going to prepare for the second game instead. They wouldn't hold anything back from game one for game two or whatever. But I do think it's one of those things, just like when I, before there was a Chicago style pizza place down the street from me, whenever I would go to Chicago, I would be so happy to eat Chicago style pizza, and I would eat like three slices and I would feel great. But the fourth slice that you ate wasn't the best slice. In the midst of that slice, you were like, this is too much. And I still really like it, but now it's too much. And so I'm not going to complain because I love this, but I actually would have been better off eating a little bit less. And I'm not sure that won't be how it's viewed for Ohio State, Michigan, that like, well, it's not that it's not great. You still love it, but actually it might have been a little bit better to have a little bit less. But they're shoving the fourth slice down your throat. You can't stop it. So, okay, you just got to get used to it.
I see what you're saying. And the fact that it's back-to-back is what makes it especially weird. But, I mean, ask yourself, the intensity of that game last year in Indianapolis, if the same scenario had played out, if Ohio State had to play Michigan 1 week later again, but now it's indoors, now it's like a controlled environment, neutral site, less flu, whatever. Like the intensity that Ohio State would have brought into that game, the intensity that Michigan would have had to bring into that game to defend what it had just taken and not have Ohio State potentially take it back from them. Like, I think that would have been a pretty insane environment. And I think what's going to happen is in theory, it's going to be like the best divisional rivalries in football. It'll be like, I don't know, like what? Like Steelers and Ravens when they're both great and they're playing for the third time that season or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I grew up experiencing some of this. Like when the Bears actually had good teams, once in a while you would get these great seasons where like the Bears and Packers, I remember 1 year Jay Cutler played, took the Bears to the NFC Championship game and lost to the Packers, of course. But, you know, third time that year that those teams have played, and an intensity builds all season. But it doesn't have to, it isn't back-to-back like this. And that is going to, it's going to affect that dynamic for sure.
Yeah. But again, I think it'll just be different. It doesn't mean that it's bad, but it is a little weird, and it certainly is different. But it, there are things that will be very good to it. And I think the point that you made off the top, which I do think is important, is like, all right, well, your choices this year are an Ohio State-Michigan rematch, or the Ohio State-Michigan winner plays a three-loss team they're going to be favored by 28 against. Which do you pick? And I think in that scenario, because those are the only two choices. Now, like in 2019, Ohio State played Wisconsin in the regular season and then played Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. So they have played, right, an opponent twice. It's not like it's never happened before. We just covered the back-to-back. But I think in that scenario, Nathan, and that's the whole thing that everybody's bemoaned since they went to East and West, which is what they should have done, but that the West can't keep up and the best teams are in the East, and so we're going to solve that. And the idea of maybe back-to-back Ohio State-Michigan is just something you're going to have to deal with. But I do think right now, right, what would you rather have, Nathan? Ohio State-Purdue? Ohio State-Iowa? Or Ohio State-Michigan 2?
Well, Ohio State-Iowa is third on that list by far. Yeah. I think I would rather have round two Ohio State-Michigan.
Yeah, so would I. And that's no offense, but just like Purdue, the other teams just can't hang.
No, Purdue isn't at that level. Purdue and whoever, I think whoever wins this nonsense in the West, it's going to show up that they're not at that level. It happened last year. Like Iowa gets in the championship game against Michigan and it was a debacle. And so here's what's like, so who do you think is going to win the West? What's your prediction?
Who do I think is going to win? Who does Purdue play this week? Do you know? Let me look. I have it on my
I think
sheet.
They play Northwestern and Indiana.
In all right, Northwestern, Indiana. So I guess like I would say
worst teams in the conference.
I guess I think Purdue, because I think Minnesota beats Iowa this week, but Minnesota then needs Purdue to lose one of these two games, and Purdue, lucky for Purdue, is literally playing the two worst teams in the Big Ten the last 2 weeks of the year. So like, if they can't beat Northwestern Indiana, I don't know what they're doing.
I would also pick Minnesota to beat Iowa, and I have no confidence that Purdue would beat both Northwestern and Indiana. Like, anything can happen in the West. Like Illinois, like, just lost to Michigan State and Purdue at home when but it had like a chance to control its own destiny. Like,
but to say anything can happen in the West, Northwestern is like the one team that doesn't apply to, because Northwestern beat Nebraska in the first game of the year and hasn't won a Big Ten game since. And Indiana is in the East, and they stink on crackers. Like, they're awful. So it just is very lucky for Purdue. It would be if the door is open, if Minnesota beats Iowa or Nebraska beats Iowa and opens that door, and Jeff Brohm doesn't walk through it by beating Northwestern and Indiana, like, Purdue fans are going to, they should be mad. Oh, like, that would be Purdue blowing this.
I mean, the door is very open for that. And the other thing is, even if Iowa goes up to Minnesota and wins, like, I am far short of 100% certainty that Iowa would then beat Nebraska. Far short of it. Like, that is exactly the sort of nonsense that would happen in the West.
So let me end with this. If it's Ohio State, Iowa, do you think the coaches' news conference on Friday will be a little bit weird for me?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Will you attend the coaches' press conference on Friday?
But I wonder what Kirk would do or what anybody else would do. I think if we get to that scenario, I would attempt to just like be normal and be at the news conference. And if I want to ask something of Ryan Day or Kirk Ferentz, I'll just ask something. I don't think I'd be like, "Hey Kirk, guess it was a good decision not to fire your boy," or whatever, you know, like, I don't think I would lean into it, but I wonder like if he would or anybody else would. So,
Yeah, it's been funny. Like, you're seeing I'm seeing literal, like, actual Iowa reporters saying, like, "Oh, I just walked by so-and-so, and he kind of smirked and was like, 'You guys left us for dead 3 weeks ago.'" And I'm just thinking, like, yeah, they did, because you're dead. Like, you're all just sort of rotting your way to Indianapolis. Like, what are we even talking about here? None of these teams are – this isn't like there's three two-loss teams, and they're all in the top 25, and, like, which one – like, what's happening in the Pac-12, right? Like, that's not what we're talking about with the Big Ten West. These are teams that are, like, people shun their eyes from watching Iowa play football, and they might be in Indianapolis vying for the conference championship.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, again, the point was not that, like, Iowa is a ridiculously terrible team across the board. It was that their inept offense run by the coach's son was awful and unacceptable. And so Iowa did beat 24 to 10 on Saturday. And in that game, Iowa scored 24 points while gaining 146 total yards, which is pretty hard to wrap your head around. And they averaged 2.1 yards per play. They were 14 of 23 passing for 94 yards, and they ran it 45 times for 52 yards. They averaged 1.2 yards per carry, but their defense is like lights out. Their defense is like borderline Georgia of the North. They had a pick six, and I think they had another special teams play that set up a touchdown. So it's like the things that they do well, they do very well. It's just there's a side of the ball that, like, they are managing to overcome. But, again, you get them on a fast track indoors. You saw what Michigan did to them last year, and I'm assuming that if Iowa gets there, either Michigan or Ohio State would be a version of that to them again. So, good luck to the Ferentzes. When we come back, what you watching, what you eating, what you thinking, next on Buckeye Talk. Doug and Nathan, 614-350-3315 to be a tech subscriber. I'll start off with what you're watching, because I want to talk about something that was not on a screen, and it was that I watched the full, as much as I could while I was working, the full Ohio State game day experience through the eyes of someone who is not a football fan, but is a huge marching band fan. And that is my younger daughter, who attended the game on Saturday. She had gone to one game when she was much, much younger. She is in her high school marching band. I think I've talked about it. She absolutely loves it. And so she and my wife went to the Indiana game, and we went to the full – I went with them. We went to the full skull session before the game, which I don't know that I had ever done. I'd been in the skull session like when the football team comes in, but I don't think I'd ever like watched it sort of from beginning to end. And so that was an experience, and she loved that. And then she was very interested, obviously, in the pregame and Script Ohio, and she was super interested in that. And then she was all fired up for the halftime show. And then, you know, just she was not interested in the football. So I have an older daughter who's interested in the football and a younger daughter who's interested in the band. And it's just a reminder, Nathan, of what an experience it is for someone who loves marching band. She got like three doses of it in the skull session, the pregame, and the halftime, and came away like having a spectacular day, loving it as someone who just does not enjoy football. And so I know there are people out there, maybe not listening to this podcast, it's not a band podcast, but it is a reminder that Ohio State, that game day opportunity is special because everybody has a band, but nobody has a band like Tbiddle. And, you know, you're watching like a team that's trying to be the number one team in the country, you're watching the number one band in the country. And so I know that. The first game I ever covered at Ohio Stadium, I went down and like stood in the stands and watched the pregame show and like took it in. And I have paid attention to the halftime shows over the years. I very much appreciate what that band does for people. But it was enlightening for me to see it through my daughter's eyes, and she just had a spectacular day. So to be able to watch Tbiddle do its thing is just an absolute treat. And nobody listened to this is surprised by that, but it was a great Saturday for her, and I certainly enjoyed it on her behalf.
I remember,
you a band guy? You like the band? You like the band?
I was in band in high school, and we didn't have we didn't have marching band at my high school. We had pep band. So, like, you would sit – I remember definitely being up in an area at basketball games and playing. And I think we did a similar thing at football games. We didn't actually go on the field, but we were there to play for a period and then left, I think, or something. And then we the school has now since consolidated with a nearby town. But for a time, we were just – which was – this is a popular thing in Illinois. You would have these co-ops that were just for sports. So, like, I was Jamaica High School, and it was Catlin High School. So, for a while, it was just this Catlin-Jamaica co-op, and then they changed the name to Salt Fork, which is the name of the high school now. But, and they did have marching band. And so, there was a lot of, like, absorbing each other's preferences on certain things. Because you would play, like, half your games at the other high school and half your home games at your own high school and stuff. It was kind of weird. But one of the things we had to acquiesce to was we had to start doing marching band. So we had this very like rudimentary marching band that we had to learn for like just my senior year of high school.
What'd you play?
Bass clarinet.
Nice. Oh, my daughter plays whatever the normal clarinet is. Is it called normal clarinet?
It's just clarinet. I started on clarinet, but then by the time I got to high school, it was bass clarinet.
Yeah. Well, you grew into it. When you were just little, you were just a little regular clarinet. Then you grew into a big bass clarinet. Yeah.
The bass clarinet was kind of nice because it was black, and you got to hold it more like a saxophone as opposed to like
the
clarinet is down in front of you.
Nice. All right, what are you watching?
I was a huge fan of Unsolved Mysteries when I was a kid. I used to love coming home. We actually, I think it was on Wednesday nights, and we would go to church on Wednesday nights, but that was like something that we would like tape every week on the old VHS and then get home and just watch it. We just had like one tape of Unsolved Mysteries that we would watch over and over. And Netflix, if people don't know, has brought back Unsolved Mysteries, not like the old episodes, which I think you actually can find a lot of those on YouTube, which are fun to watch sometimes. But it's like new episodes, and each episode is like one thing, as opposed to like the old Unsolved Mysteries where they would put like cram three things into an hour. And this is like an hour, I think, or so, focused on just one story, and it's a little bit more dramatic. I feel like the old Unsolved Mysteries had a very like early 90s kind of hammy feel to it sometimes, like the reenactments they would do. This is a little bit more stylized and dramatic, but I'm digging it. Like I think there's like two or three seasons of it now. We're in the newest season. We've been watching each season as it comes out, and it's kind of nostalgic, but also if you like just sort of the unsolved mysteries concept. It's fun to sort of ponder these various mysteries that are still out there.
So you had a cassette tape of unsolved mysteries that you would watch repeatedly?
No, I'm saying that you had a tape that was like kind of the Unsolved Mysteries tape, and you were taping over it all the time. Like, you know what I
Oh,
mean? Like
okay.
you were,
Yeah.
because there's only like a couple hours on an old VHS tape
Yeah.
back in the day when you were like, oh my God, 4 hours on one tape, like all that memory. And before we had any concept of like a 32 gigabyte megaphone or iPhone, I mean, whatever. So, yeah, but I have like vivid memories of like different episodes when I was a kid, and now it's been fun. Like it's a for people who like this stuff, like it runs the gamut from like, oh, this is like a college kid just disappeared and there's never been any trace of him and they don't know, or like maybe there's aliens. It like it goes
Yeah.
it's a wide range of topics.
Because I guess at some point, if you would watch unsolved mysteries repeatedly, the same ones, then they just become solved mysteries at some point, right? It's like, what? I mean, what's the, or is the whole point that like they're never solved? Is every unsolved
Well,
mystery not solved, or is it just unsolved to you at the beginning and by the end it's a solved mystery?
that's an astute point you bring up, Doug, and I wanted to bring up one of the things about the new Unsolved Mysteries that isn't as satisfying, because the old Unsolved Mysteries was on for several years. And occasionally you would get done watching a segment of Unsolved Mysteries, and then Robert Stack would break in and go, "Update." And they would take you back to one of a previous episode that they'd had, and they would be showing you, oh, this guy got arrested for like stealing a bunch of money from old women and leaving, or they found this, they solved this murder or whatever. Like they would have an update on a previous episode that they had already done. This one, it's not as serial as that, I guess. It's more things stand alone a little bit more. I think they probably have a website where they give updates or whatever, but I don't get that same vibe of like you could be watching and all of a sudden somebody would be like, "Oh, remember that thing we showed you last season? Well, here's who did it." Like that is not quite the same vibe.
All right. So, what you eating? I just was reminded. I went to my family and I went to a new Asian food restaurant the other night, and it's just, outside a strip mall near our house by the mall. It used to be a different restaurant, and then that restaurant closed, and now it's a new restaurant, and it was just like a very good. I usually get Kung Pao chicken. I got my Kung Pao chicken. It was high quality ingredients. The spice was good. A variety of vegetables. The peanuts were in there. Like it was just a very high quality meal. And I very much enjoyed it. And we were the only people in there. And there were probably 40 tables in the dining room. And we were literally like at 7 o'clock on a weeknight, the only people there. And the manager came over to our table like four times, and the server was the most attentive server. I could barely get through like half my glass of iced tea, and she was refilling it. And it was just like a very enjoyable meal. And I just thought, my gosh, the restaurant industry is a grind. Like,
Oh,
I
it's
don't
rough.
know what, like, it's because it's not, I mean, it's just Chinese food. Like, it's not, people know what that is, but it's like, well, we're not reinventing the wheel here. We'll just do a thing that people like and we'll do it well. And I thought it was a very well done meal. But I don't know how you differentiate yourself. I don't know how you get the word out. I don't know how you retain. Like, I just, and whenever we go somewhere like to a good restaurant and we see that, it's like, man, we better keep coming. Like, we want to do what we can to help keep this place in business. But I don't know if there are people listening who have ever been in the restaurant business, who have ever worked at a restaurant or managed a restaurant or tried to open a restaurant. And I just don't know how you differentiate yourself. Because it's like, hey, you know that thing that you like? Well, we do it well. Great. But man, I almost felt bad for the people in there because they were busting it, man. And I just don't know what else they can do. And I'm worried they're not going to be around that long. So I'm fascinated by the restaurant industry. I mean, I had that franchise guy on, like how you go about it, how you have ideas, how you execute it, the supply chain issues, setting your price points, trying to, again, differentiate yourself in a crowded market. But I just like good luck to everybody out there in that business, because it just seems tough.
It's the worst when you find a place that you really like and you get that vibe that, like, man, there's just the word is not out about this place. And you kind of try to get the word out there to people.
Yeah.
But it's like, this isn't going to work. I remember when this is not necessarily the best example, but I whenever I went back to Pittsburgh or would visit friends in Pittsburgh, I enjoyed Permane Brothers, which is like the place there where you get the slaw and the fries on the sandwich, whatever. A little gimmicky place, but I always really liked it. And they got one in Indianapolis, and I was like really excited. Now, the quality wasn't quite the same. You didn't have all the same sources for all the things that they used, but it was a good approximation of it. And it was like right downtown. It was like in the Circle Center area, that mall area that people know from all the times they come to Big Ten stuff. But anytime we would go there, it was very sparsely attended. Like very, it wasn't drawing a crowd. And we knew pretty early on, like, this probably just isn't going to work, and it's no longer open. So if you find those places, like, you have to kind of sometimes help get the word out to your friends or whatever to yours is maybe even a better example, though, because that's like a very like corporate thing. I mean, it couldn't have like a better placement. Like, people should know about it just by driving down the street, walking down the street. But those smaller mom and pop places maybe are the ones where you have to do a little of the work yourself sometimes to ensure that it's going to be around.
All right. What are you eating?
Oh, man. So obviously I've been under the weather here a bit, and I might go like years sometimes without eating chicken noodle soup, but it's like such a cliche to like, oh, I've got a cold, I better get some chicken noodle soup. And I've had it like twice in the last 3 days. I got it tonight. Just like grabbed a can at Walgreens while I was picking something else up, and a little homestyle chicken noodle soup. And like, it really hits the spot. I don't know what it is about it. I'm sure there's some scientific reasoning behind it, but it makes me think, like, should I be eating it more? Or is it kind of like what you were talking about before with Ohio State, Michigan? Like, you just save it for that one hit when you really need it, and it'll have a better impact.
Yeah, I bet there's a psychological component to that as well, that because it's a thing you so often eat when you're sick, and it does make, like, you have memories of it making you feel better, so it, like, it makes you feel better. But what it actually – I'm not so sure. If you ate chicken noodle soup, like, three times in a week when you were healthy, I'm not sure it wouldn't make you feel sick. Because it's like, oh, wait, am I supposed to be sick when I eat this? Like, oh, no, maybe I should get a cold.
Yeah, maybe.
all right, what are you thinking about?
I don't have a good one prepared for this. Today, one thing I was thinking about was, so being sick this weekend, my wife and child were out of town. And I was thinking, one of the many times I've thought this over the last, since May 1st, like, people out there who are single parents, I don't know how they do it. Like, the idea that, like, I could have been, like, this sick, but then also had to take care of, like, a tiny baby or a two-year-old or whatever, is, I can't really even fathom it. And I've gained so much respect for people who have done that and successfully raised, you know, good citizens or whatever. It just seemed like such a tough call, man. And kudos to all those men and women who have done that.
Yeah, no, you just never get a second off. And you always have to be at your best no matter what.
It already feels like that sometimes. And I don't have that situation. There's two of us, so.
Yeah. And I do think that is one of those situations where, like, your community, that's why communities matter. That's why you know, your relationships with, you know, whether it's in your faith or your religious organization or like a Boys and Girls Club or whatever, like, that's why community matters, because, like, none of us can do it by ourselves. But whether you're a single parent or two parents or you don't have a kid, but you need help sometimes, like, I think it's a reminder of all that, of like, everybody needs a little help sometimes. But, yes, remarkable. The single parents out there, remarkable what they do. So mine isn't nice. So a crypto thing got caught on fire and some guy lost like $13.5 billion. And I think I'm glad, but I don't want normal. I don't want like everyday people who maybe invested in crypto because it seemed like a smart thing to do, to lose a lot of their money in that. But as we have talked about, when I've talked about the crypto ATM or whatever, and just like as everybody has pointed out, it felt like every Super Bowl commercial was a crypto ad, and the crypto thing that went under, like Larry David did an ad for, I think Tom Brady did an ad for, Steph Curry was involved with it. This was like people were doing ads for this thing that just completely went up in smoke. And as someone who never really understood crypto but thought it sounded too good to be true, the fact that the guy who had the thing, and I guess at least maybe, I don't know if all the people lost their money, but that guy went from being worth $13.5 billion to zero overnight. And as it turns out, the word came out today that Michael Lewis, the author, has been embedded with that guy for the last 6 months to write a book. And now it's like the end of the book is, and then everything vanished, the end. And it's like, well, okay, Sandra Bullock's going to win another Oscar being that guy's mom or something. So I don't know if this is what old people feel every time young people try something and it doesn't work. But my inclination to ha, 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 the crypto collapse is very, very strong. Yeah. But and like for like the whatever, I don't know if it's whoever the people are, whoever the high up crypto people are, you know, can get bent, right? They can cram it. I don't give two hoots about the high up crypto people, but I certainly do not want other people to lose lots of money in an investment. So to have been hornswoggled in some way, and like I never did crypto because I don't even know what it is or how it works or whether you want to buy one crypto or a gazillion crypto. But like when all those Super Bowl commercials were on, I was like, is this actually real? What are people doing? So I'm trying to contain my haha. And if you're, don't punch your car or your phone because you lost money in crypto. I feel bad for you. I hope you're okay. And I hope, but man, sometimes stuff's just like too good to be true, man. And I guess there's some crypto stuff that's still working, but I would be cautious.
It's volatile. It's definitely volatile. And I think that is starting to happen more though, from just things I've heard, that people are, you know, it's one thing if you're young and you have a little bit of your disposable income or even your investment income that you want to get risky with. What I think is unfortunate is when it's older people near retirement who are getting talked into taking a shot at this and it's not going well. It's just a very, very, very volatile market. I don't know if it will. We're not financial experts, so I'll probably just end it there. But I agree with you. And I think that's true of like all these financial outcomes. It can be very easy to be like, oh, like the bank, you know, sticking it to the banks or whatever. But it's not just the people running the banks that get left holding the bag. A lot of times it's a lot of innocent people farther down the line who also, whether it was the mortgage crisis, whether it was the other things like that, like the little people are getting the shaft in a lot of these situations.
And listen, Wall Street collapsed too, right? I mean, it's not like crypto is the first thing to like steal people's investment money. So we understand that. So whatever, but like there was at times I felt this as an older person, like with some of the crypto stuff, it was like, oh yeah, you're not invested in crypto. Well, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like I'm just okay. Okay. Boomer. What are you going to do? Ooh, put your money in a savings account, boomer. And so that's the part of me that is like, oh, your $13.5 billion vanished. Like weird 30-year-old guy with weird hair. Sorry, bro. Like you personally, that guy, everybody knows what I'm talking about. Like that guy, that particular guy can cram it until he can't cram it no more.
I've had some arguments on Facebook with some tangentially friend people who have been big advocates for this stuff because, I mean, a lot of the stuff that they propose as being benefits of this system seem like giant pitfalls. Like including like the lack of regulation, like they were, you know, this is a way to invest without all this government interference. I'm like, well, so it's just the Wild West. Like, how's that better for me helping assure that I'm not eating cat food someday and my kid can go to college. Like, that's really all this is about.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm not to be vindictive, except I am. So I hope everybody is okay, but that was an interesting story. And I almost feel like Tom Brady and Steph Curry and Larry David and all the people who are like, yeah, wait, you want to use my fame and goodwill to help me? So I'll do a commercial for your thing that I don't really know what it is, but you can give me like an investment in it and all kinds of money. And I'll just do a, like Larry David, whole Larry David commercial was like, he was the curmudgeon who didn't believe in crypto. And then he was an idiot for that. So he sold his whole persona to a thing that evaporated. So like, let's guess what, Larry David, like, I think you're funny, but like, I think you should be on the hook a little bit for this too. Like, you gave your name to a thing that collapsed. Like, why should I trust anything you say ever again?
Yeah, but one of my financial bedrocks actually at this point is like, the more celebrities you have to hire to sell me insurance or whatever, the less I feel like I'm probably getting my money's worth from your company. I'm paying for the Peyton Manning, what's his name, sing song things on the bus if I get nationwide insurance. Like, that's what I'm paying for, as much as I'm
based
paying
in
for
Columbus,
insurance. Yeah, well,
listening, based in Columbus. You don't think I'll start swiping the local insurance companies because a crypto dude imploded.
I just hope that all of our listeners are able to get down to their gas station Bitcoin ATMs and withdraw their actual money in time.
Here's your crypto. What is it? Is it like a silver dollar? What is a crypto? Okay. Anyway, that's it. That's what I'm thinking. I can't help it. It's what I think. So we appreciate. I'm sure people are going to get mad about that. I'm sorry. If the guy who lost $13.5 billion is listening and I told you to cram it, if you happen to be an Ohio State fan, I am sorry. I'm sorry you lost $13.5 billion. But maybe you should be sorry for like the times when you were like making fun of people like me because we weren't buying a crypto at the gas station. Okay. He's Nathan Baird. When are you going to be healthy?
That's a great question, but hopefully by the time I have to get on a plane and go to Maryland on Friday.
Okay. Definitely by
hopefully
Michigan.
Hopefully sooner than that.
Yeah.
I got some juicy new meds to pick up in the morning that I think will help.
Nice. So he's getting back to health. We'll be covering Ohio State, Maryland this week. What's that line? 28.5?
27.5 when it came out.
Okay. So, what are you going to do? Big Ten West still at stake. Illinois, Michigan this week. ReadCleveland.com/OSU. Try the text at 614-350-3315. Now I feel bad. Now I feel bad for the crypto. Sorry, crypto. I didn't mean to be mean crypto. I was lashing out. But my money's in a bank, by the way. Didn't evaporate. It's in a bank. All right. He's Nathan Baird. I'm Doug Lee Maurice. And that was Buckeye Talk.